Blog Talk Radio.
Getting it done. This is Walter Dean. Show that we have scheduled for you today does not sound like it was music coming. But there is going to be some music. However, it's going to be about a person who we knew very, very well as Bill Withers, who was a very good musician, fantastic singer, and an outstanding writer. Let's listen to some of the comments that he makes as he's interviewed in 2005.
And sitting with me now is Bill Withers. Where'd you learn to sing that way? In other words, where's home?
I'm from Slab Fork, West Virginia. You know where that is, right?
No, Slab Fork, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Did you start singing at home, or did you?
No, I wasn't interested in music growing up. For some reason, I heard music. You know, I walked by and I heard some. But growing up, mostly I was interested in getting away from where I grew up, you know.
The object is to do something that you think that somebody would like to listen to. It's nothing about me telling them my experience. And you know what I mean. I mean, I'm much more private than that. I'm not anxious to tell anybody anything about myself.
But these songs on this first album are very personal songs.
You know what? Because, and the only way I can explain to you is that's the way I was.
Man, it's really hot.
I'm kind of one of those left field kind of guys that wasn't really obvious. You know, some people are just obvious. They're just spectacular. They look great and they dance and they just, yeah, they can excite everybody. You know, I'm going to come out. You know, you figure 1970, 71 or something. You know, I'm this black guy come out sitting on a chair with an acoustic guitar.
These songs from your first album are incredibly sort of personal and revealing a lot about you. I mean, you talked about "With Ain't No Sunshine," just getting past that sort of that macho thing.
Men have problems admitting to losing things. I think women are much better at that. Women can say stuff like, "I loved him. I really, really loved him. But he just left. Why'd he leave like that?" Men given the same situation usually say something like, "I'm glad the old Jive Brown split, man." Knowing all the time that it's really killing him inside. So once in my life, I wanted to forego my own male ego and admit to losing something. So I came up with, "Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. Wonder this time where she's gone."
That must have been a big deal for you to do that song.
No. I can't speak for how anybody else functions. I have a personal theory. You're sitting around scratching yourself, and something crosses your mind. Something occurs to you, you know. Ain't no sunshine. Okay, that crosses your mind. Where does it come from? I don't know. You know how they call certain talents a gift? That's a gift if something just crosses your mind.
I ought to leave the young thing alone, but ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away,
thought that Ain't No Sunshine was the best song on that album. Because people talk a lot of shit. Let me tell you something. Ain't No Sunshine was the B-side of my first single. So had somebody not thrown away the best song on my first album, I wouldn't have had a career.
And most people who are from very rural, simple areas are rural, simple people. That's the way life is. And big city guys got all them games they run on you. You know, you have to. Everybody's pretty much a synopsis of where they come from.
She couldn't stand me anymore, so she just took the kids and went.
I'm black. I stutter, but I'm a little yellow boy, so some black folks is pissed off about that, and white folks is pissed off, period. Everything, I ain't got nothing. I got asthma. I'm 16 years old, and I'm having trouble stop wetting the bed. So the most that I remember about the people that raised me and the people in that community, and these were coal miners. These were good people, character people. All they had was the time they spent with you to convince you that the whole world was wrong about you. How'd you like to take on the world?
Maybe the lateness of the hour.
When I grew up, you know, you went to a black school, the undertaker was black, all the teachers were black, everything was black. And you knew how to talk through the back door for the white folks that your mother worked for. You know, I've come to guys, well, you know, Bessie Smith, I don't give a shit. You gonna tell me the history of the blues? I am the goddamn blues. Look at me, shit. I'm from West Virginia. I'm the first man in my family not to work in the coal mines. My mother scrubbed floors on her knees for a living. And you gonna tell me about the goddamn blues because you read some book written by John Hammond? Kiss my ass. Excuse me, that was fun. Nobody goes in making a record, writing a book, painting a picture without thinking, wait till they see this shit.
It's your first album. It's just dynamite. And that was the first time you had turned to singing professionally, isn't it? With the release of that album.
Yeah. I hadn't done any singing before that, except in the shower, you know. But I think a lot of that has to do with the opportunities that I got, you know. Usually they record an artist. They don't let him do what he wants to do at first. And my people just let me go in and do what I want to do.
When I came in here to try and do this, something I've never done before, Mr. Jones, Booker T, said to me, don't worry about it. Just do what you do and do it good.
Booker and those guys were perfect for me because nobody came in there trying to make things slick.
Fish was made for hooking, and bits was made for cooking, and eyes was made for looking. Go on and do it, do it, do it. Go on and do it, do it, do it.
There's not a lot of stuff because there wasn't a lot of money to do it. It's basically kind of raw. It might be like somebody else's demos.
Well, when you first started, did you think you were going to sing your own music before you wrote it, or did you start writing music that you wanted to get other people to perform?
I wanted to sing, but the only songs that anybody laid on me was had all the cliches in them, like I love you so, I'll never let you go, you are my one desire, you set my heart on fire, you know. So I thought, wow, you know, I would like to say something that hasn't been said so much, you know.
The subject matter we were dealing with, simple things, like something like grandma's hands or something like that, you know. I mean, it doesn't have to be like this glossy singing with all the beautiful things.
I'm sick and tired of somebody saying I love you with both arms up in the air like that. You know, I can't believe that. You understand? When, da-da, I'm sick of that. You know, I would like to just be like for real for a change.
How do you do, Lucy? The show's been hard to find. I heard you had a daughter, 6 years old, and I just can't keep from crying. 6 years of Lucy, Lord, I have mercy, that's gone longer.
You know, looking back at those, at that time, I thought I had a way with words. Even when I stuttered, I felt like that if you gave me a piece of paper and a pencil and I was in the mood, that I could turn a phrase.
Has she grown? Does she sleep well?
To me, hearing that acoustic guitar on these songs with a black person singing who wasn't an old blues guy,
yeah,
it was so radical to me.
You know, I was kind of the clean-cut, preppy-looking guy, too. What I'm saying is, nobody tried to change me into anything.
You should have told me something. You should have told me something.
Makes me think. This album, this first album of yours, helped open the world up in a lot of ways because those songs
were so
personal.
And for me, what it made me have to adjust to socially because, you know, all those terms, what I had was some crossover appeal. Barbara Streisand did a cover of Grandma's Hands, and I felt like, now that's cool, but we come from different circumstances. She's Jewish. You just put yourself in Jesus' hands. So if that was that transferable, then I did my job.
So you're writing Grandma's Hands. You said to yourself, boom.
I'm thinking, if somebody don't feel this, you know, I'm thinking, I got them. I got them.
Grandma's Hands, clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's Hands, played a tambourine so well. Grandma's Hands used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast, might fall.
You know, people say, well, what made your grandmother that memorable to you? When you birth a black child, you take on the world, brother. Because you have to convince that child that everybody that thinks all that shit about them is wrong. How hard must it be to lift somebody else up when somebody's beating you down? God damn, man. Come on, brother.
Grandma's Hands, the local with
now, if you're going to sit down and write something, you'd probably write about something that's a fact that you had to cope with. As good, Grandma's Hands, that was my experience. I had a guy that worked at a big agency, IFA. Drove a Rolls Royce, actually say to me, well, you know, black people can't write. And he doesn't understand that I can be as flowery and as literate as anybody. I know how to exchange soul with rednecks and southern black people picking cotton, man. I know them. You don't know them. You don't know them kind of feelings, man.
So you knew.
Your grandma ain't never sat on a porch. She probably never lived in a house that had a porch. Your grandma don't even know where the church is with a potbelly stove in the middle and clapping hands and playing the tambourine. They don't know that. But Johnny Cash come to me and said, I'd like to meet your grandmother. Yeah. A guy that
picks up garbage, for instance, is needed more than a guy that plays baseball. He doesn't receive as much notoriety. But I would rather see my garbage gone than to see some cat hit a ball 500 feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would much rather not sing for a month than not go to the bathroom for a month, you see. I think values are sometimes upside down, you know.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind.
So many things have changed, some for the good, some for the, you know, because you got to remember, with my generation, we were the beginning of the civil rights generation. And that's why we have difficulty adjusting to this thug culture, you know, because we think like, man, we did all that, and this is all y'all going to show us for this? You want to be a thug, fool? We risked our lives when we were scared as hell.
Skip over the ocean like a stone.
We were terrified. And now you want to walk around giving the impression that you are dangerous and dishonest? How dare you, sucker? Boy, you want power. You want to be involved in power in the world? And all you want to have power is between 104th Street and 109th Street? What do you want to waste your time trying to, you know, trying to be nickel slick?
Just take, for instance, Saturday Night in Harlem and quite a few of the things you do. It really lays out the black experience more so than any other artist I think has done in as popular an album as yours. What do you see as the prognosis of your career? Do you think you can remain just as you are?
First, I have to become somebody that understands what prognosis means, man.
I'm a night of Harlem. Man, it's a really hot. Well, it's too hot to sleep, and I'm too cold to eat. I don't care if I die or not. When tonight it falls out, oh, radiator won't get hot. Out of me, those lads all that he don't care if I freeze to death or not. I'm a Saturday night in a Harlem. Yeah, now everything's all right. You can really swing and shake your wrist. They hang the park till the out of sight.
I'm different. The world is different. Then I was 6 months out of the factory. I've been around Beverly Hills for 30 years now. We do what we do because we are the way we are.
The first time I heard Harlem, it seemed to me to be the Harlem I wanted to hear about.
Yeah.
Each one of those verses builds. It starts very simple, and to me it's like a movie. And it was, to me, being from the South, coming to New York, the kind of experience that it was shocked me to hear that somebody else had.
Shit, you got people over in Juilliard all day long paying all that money. And when I come from, you know, Stratton High School back in Beckley, West Virginia, and I thought of that shit.
Delegation wants a donation. Send the preacher to the Holy Land. Say hello, honey, don't give your money to that lying and cheating man. Say hello,
who's that said luck is the intersection where preparation and opportunity meet? I don't think you can say it any better than that.
I'm home all by myself. 5 years old, and it sure is cold. Mama's out looking steak for someone else. Sure am sleepy, but I'm gonna wait till mama comes. It's a real
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Lucy.
and I'm too full to eat. I don't care if I die or not. When the night in Harlem, oh, radiator won't get hot. Out of me, no less, Lord, he don't care if I freeze to death or not. I'm a friend with the night in the heart. Yeah, and I'm everything all right. You get a really swing and shake your pretty thing. Sunday morning, here in our heart, now everybody's all dressed up. I can hear folks getting a home from the party, and the good folks just got up. I know cookie delegation wants a donation. Sing the preacher to the Holy Land. Say hello, honey, don't give me your money.
Can you believe it? A man who opened his mouth, fantastic stuff came out. Dead and gone, passed on last week from a heart infraction.
No, he didn't die from the other thing that we were fighting today, but what a fantastic songwriter he was. Said what he wanted to say when he felt like saying it. He was not one of these kind of people that held back on anything. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to much of what he did. He was married for a while there, but you want to hear something? We're going to go on, and that particular interview took place when he was like about 2005. But they sprinkled in some of the things that he did when he was much younger. We're going to go on and listen to him call, it's called Catching Up. Let's listen.
Well, first I should ask my wife, do I have a suit tested?
Every year,
it's very nice.
Gala.
It's
right
flattering.
Here in Philadelphia.
Well, I didn't leave anything. I'm just me, and, you don't see yourself. You know, other people, you're just inside yourself living. So I haven't really left anything. I just do different, I just go about it maybe on my own terms rather than the traditional, running around the country playing gigs all over. Yeah, some people can do it, but I'm 70 years old, and the thought of catching airplanes every other day or something just, and probably because I can, being a songwriter, and I have other options that allow me to stay at home if I want to. And that's just my DNA, Next year, I might go crazy and decide I want a lot of people to see me and you know, you might get sick of me.
Were you ever approached to do music for motion pictures?
Yeah. But never anything that I wanted to do. I mean, growing up in the 30s and the 40s and coming of age in the 50s and having gone through trying to prove yourself, I remember being one of the first black aircraft mechanics that a lot of people had seen. When you're 17 or 18 years old and you show up somewhere and you got a bunch of grown men, experienced grown men, who have absolute authority over you, trying to convince you that you're not smart enough to drain the oil out of a damned airplane. Then when you evolve and you go, and in my case, I decided in my 30s that I would like to do some music. And then when I was able to do it, and then somebody comes to me and tells me they're offering me an opportunity, and they shove in front of me, they scream for me, "Cotton Comes to Harlem." I worked too hard as a regular guy, and I knew that all that clown stuff, when I was trying to prove to somebody that you could trust me, that if I work on an airplane, you can fly it. And then when I wanted to advance, and all some guy wants to tell me is something stupid that he saw on some TV show or some movie, I made a decision that I didn't want to be involved in that. And I probably, you know, I probably didn't make certain friends, and I certainly didn't make certain money. But I never wanted to embarrass myself with that stuff, because I knew what it was like to be a regular guy with a regular job trying to prove to somebody that I am smart enough. And, you know, you don't have to be a genius to be a mechanic. You know what I mean? So I probably should have answered that question more simply. But, you know, that's how I think.
Mr. Bill Withers.
Hi, this is Bill Withers, and you're watching Real Black.
Bill Withers. So, once again, you heard him speak out and say what he felt like saying. The first one was As I Am, and the last one was Catching Up with Bill Withers. So you heard the man talk, and you heard his music. What a fantastic life he lived. Passed on last week in his 70s, 77, I think. I think he was 77. We have this program today is for 45 minutes. So I'm going to try to find something to fill in for the remaining amount of time. Who I think would be fantastic to listen to or to know something about. We may not get a chance to finish what we're listening to, but we're going to listen to it anyway. I wonder how many people out there have heard of Dr. John Henrik Clark versus Mary Leskatoff in the great debate. Let's listen to a little bit of that. We won't get a chance to finish it because my show will conclude in a short while. So let's listen up.
I wanted to know what the discussion was to be, what it was about. He says, "Oh my God, you mean they're still discussing this stuff?" I said, "Yeah, of course they're still discussing this stuff, because this stuff is the stuff that scholarship is made of and that academic inquiry is made of. Tonight we enter the world of scholars who have diametrically opposing views on the subject of the origins and foundations of what we know today
as Western civilization. One school of thought is that it is distinctly African or Afro-Asian in origin. The other, that Western civilization in large measure is the bequest of ancient Greece. Make no mistake, this is not a mere difference of opinion in the ivory tower. The battle itself has become an allegory for something as important as the debate itself. Academic insurgents have breached the ramparts of the academy's high priesthood, and the battle is as much for the authority to write history and for how to write history. Our task tonight is to ferret out the truth, insofar as we can discern it, but more importantly, to question and challenge. And we have four incredible people with us tonight, and I'd like to introduce them to you and have them come to the stage as they're introduced. Already on stage is Professor John Henry Clark. They were standing for you, Dr. Clark. Teacher, historian, writer, lecturer, John Henry Clark is a unique resource and a special institution in the African world. Beginning in his early years, Dr. Clark studied the world history of African people and became a master teacher. He has authored and or edited more than 30 books, short stories and pamphlets on African and African American history, and is distinguished professor emeritus of African world history in the Department of Africana and Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College. Professor John Henry Clark. I'd like to ask to the stage Dr. Martin Bernal. Martin Bernal has been a professor of government at Cornell University since 1972 and an adjunct professor of Near Eastern Studies, also at Cornell, since 1986. Educated at King's College, Cambridge, where he earned his doctorate in Chinese studies in 1966, and at Peking University, the University of California, and Harvard, Dr. Bernal's works have been widely reviewed and criticized, in many instances as controversial. His chief publications are the two-set volume, Black Athena, The Afro-Asiatic Roots of Classical Civilization, and Cadmean Letters, The Westward Diffusion of the Semitic Alphabet Before 1400 BC. Dr. Martin Bernal. I invite to the stage Professor Mary Lefkowitz. Thank you. Nice to meet you. Thank you. You can sit right here. Mary Lefkowitz is Andrew Mellon Professor in the Humanities at Wellesley College. She is the author of Not Out of Africa, How Afrocentrism Became an Excuse to Teach Myth as History, and is co-editor of Women's Life in Greece and Rome. With fellow Wesleyan Guy McLean Rogers, she co-edited Black Athena Revisited, a collection of 20 essays by scholars from a broad range of disciplines who take dead aim at Dr. Bernal's Black Athena specifically, but contend generally that the Africa-centeredness of scholarship on the roots of what is called classical civilization is blatant revisionism. Dr. Mary Lefkowitz. I invite to the stage Professor Guy McLean Rogers. Professor Rogers, as I said, is also at Wellesley College, where he is an associate professor of Greek and history. With Dr. Lefkowitz, he co-edited Black Athena Revisited and is author of The Sacred Identity of Ephesus, Foundation Myths of a Roman City. Professor Rogers. So here we have a rather distinguished panel, and I would like them first to begin with their conclusions. They will have about no more than 5 minutes to summarize their major thrust this evening. Professor Clark, we will start with you.
Single point I wish to get across.
So what we're going to do is stop right there. So what you just finished hearing was the preamble to what you're going to hear Monday, this Monday coming. And the reason why I'm stopping right there, you know it's going to be a debate. This debate took place in 1996 with Dr. Clark and Mary Elizabeth Lefkowitz really getting it on. It's called the Great Debate. And, of course, you have other people, and I'm not going to give away really what it's all about because I want you to come back and listen to what's going to take place. Now, the other thing about this, which is so fantastic, is we had a great time, at least I did, listening to Bill Withers, a songwriter and a singer, a great songwriter, and a great soul singer, but also he was able to cross over from blues to rock and roll to jazz. And he did a song that I'll talk about it another time, but because when I play that particular person and bring up his life, because I met him in Dayton, Ohio. In any event, I wanted to say a few things about Friday. Today is Good Friday, and this is the day that our Lord Jesus Christ gave up his life for our sins. All of us have sins. All of us have sinned and probably continue to do so. But we would not be able to get into the gates of heaven had it not been for the death of this man. To prove who he was, he came back from the dead. No one else has been able to do that. This has been Getting It Done with Dr. Walter Dean. Have a good week, people.